The Miller's Dance by Winston Graham, read by Oliver J. Hembra. I would like to thank Tony Woolrich for much valuable help and advice, especially on the technical aspects of high-pressure steam. Book 1, Chapter 1. 1. On a grey day early in February 1812, a convoy was anchored off Hendrona Beach on the northwest coast of Cornwall. One of the vessels was a brig called Henry, and another a sloop, Elizabeth. Between them floated a lighter, with a massive piece of metal lying upon it and protruding over each end like a stranded whale. There were also half a dozen rowboats and a couple of gigs, one of them Nampara Girl. The beach was black with helpers and spectators. February was no safe time normally for any master to hazard his vessel so close upon an inhospitable stretch of tidal sand. But after gales and half-gales succeeding each other through November, December and January, a frost had fallen on the land. It was a light frost, disappearing each midday and coming down again at night, which was the norm for this area. But it meant that the wind had at last dropped and the sea was quiet. For a time, it had even been feared that they were to be frustrated by the sudden lack of that element of which they had for so long had too much. But after a couple of days, the lightest of breezes had sprung up from the northeast, and before dawn this Monday morning, the convoy had set out from Hale. It had taken them until noon to get here, which was full tide, though a neap tide, leaving a wide expanse of beach uncovered and much of the sand soft and yielding. The sea was very slight, its hair at the edge in little rolls of curlers hardly big enough to disturb a child. The distance overland from Hale, where the parts of the engine had been built, to Nampara was no greater than by sea, but to transport this heavy equipment through the miry lanes and over the rutted moorlands would have taken three times as long and with every possibility of getting bogged down. By sea was quicker and easier, always supposing the right moment was chosen. The brig had been the first to discharge. Since she drew the most water, she had to be unloaded into rowing boats and onto rafts well out. Mostly this was the smaller stuff, the brasses, the safety valves, the piston and piston rod, the cylinder covers, the adduction valves, the catch pins, the flange bolts, and all the working gear of a 45-inch steam engine. The sloop, Elizabeth, had been brought along mainly to carry the boiler, with which she could come closer inshore. Indeed, she deliberately ran aground, even on a tide just beginning to turn, confident that when she was the lighter by 7 tons, she would refloat herself easily. Ross Poldark, pausing a moment to bite a fish pie that his wife had brought him, stared at the scene and said, "I have never seen so many people on the beach since the wrecks after Julia died."
"Don't speak of it," said Demelza.
"That time?"
"Well, then we were young. Now we are not so young. But I wouldn't have it back."
"Not that, nor all that followed. But I'd like to be 20 again."
"Well, now we have a son older than that, and working like one demented today."
Demelza said,
"Julia would have been 22. No, 21. 22 this May."
Ross swallowed his pie. Since the sloop came in, a broad pathway of sleepers consisting of old pit props had been laid from the bottom of the cliff out to the sloop, not separated, as in a tramway, but one sleeper touching the next. The great boiler had been winched down until it rested on a timber frame, which itself stood on 8 or 9 smooth wooden rollers laid over the sleepers. Immediately it came to rest, men had leapt upon the frame and flung ropes over the boiler, securing it to prevent lateral swaying. Then they were off and away, manhandling it up the pathway. 4 men aside, while others constantly rescued the rollers from the back and inserted them at the front again. It was not just a question of strength, but of delicate balance. For if the rollers were not replaced exactly parallel, the whole thing could slew off course and go tumbling into the sand. Ross looked at the sky. It was leaden and would give them no stars tonight. The sea, of course, was unpredictable. A heavy swell might develop at any time, presaging wind, not succeeding it. But there were 2 hours of daylight yet, and once